Hello, everyone. This is Brian Smith with Vantas Commercial Real Estate. This is the first episode of the Sioux Empire Commercial Real Estate Podcast. And with me is Alex Hallback. He's been my attorney for many years. He works at Cutler Law Firm. He's an excellent attorney, does a great job for me. But don't go and work with him, because when I need him, I want him to be available. So, you know, don't take up all his time. So we're here today to talk about a lease document, the different provisions in that lease, and help you understand at least the basics of those different provisions, what they're in the lease for, and why we want to see them in the lease document, but also a little bit about what can be favorable or unfavorable for you as a tenant or landlord having to do with each one of those provisions. So, Alex, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, I'm going to just turn it over to you, let you start from the top and give us your expertise.
Oh boy, my expertise. Well, first of all, I think I have to ask, who am I representing in this transaction, the tenant or the landlord, as I review this?
Sure.
Which side do you want me to talk on first?
Well, let's go with the tenant to start with.
Okay. So representing the tenant, obviously we're going to be looking for provisions throughout the lease that are help clarify the relationship with the landlord, duties and obligations of each party on either side of the transaction. You know, some of the basics that I look for is always the term, right? How long is the term of the lease? Are there rent escalators? Mm-hmm. When do those rent escalators kick in? What are they based upon? Is it a percentage? Is it a flat rate? At what point do those get triggered? Sometimes they're triggered based on revenue of a landlord potentially, or excuse me, of a tenant or some other provision or area. So, I mean, understanding those rent escalators, obviously, if I'm looking at it from a tenant's perspective, are obviously super important.
And I think that's a great point, because a lot of times a tenant will just look at the initial rent rate and what is that going to cost them per month, and they aren't taking into account, you know, sometimes there's an annual rent escalator. Sometimes you have a rent escalation upon a renewal option, those types of things. And really, especially when you have an annual rent escalator in the initial term, that can have a pretty big, you know, impact, or at least a somewhat significant impact on cash flow. And it's something that they should plan for.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as a tenant looking at this, you want to make sure that your obviously your lease and your monthly obligation fits within your pro forma for your business too. So if you're not planning on there being a 2 or a 3% escalator after year one, you didn't think that kicked in until after the first 5-year term or something like that. It's important to know what's in the lease and what the monthly costs are going to be. On top of that, another provision that I look for that is sometimes overlooked or misunderstood is the difference between a gross lease and a triple net lease.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is exactly where I wanted to go next as we're talking about monthly total costs. I've run into so many situations where a tenant thinks that the rent rate per square foot is all they need to calculate. And they think that they've got this great opportunity to rent this location for this, you know, what they think to be a reasonable rent rate, and they aren't taking the triple net expenses into account. So first off, talk a little bit about the, you know, triple net and what that all entails and how that can fluctuate from one year to the next, but also remind me after you're done, because I've got a question for you specifically on that triple net too.
Okay, perfect. Well, I mean, so base rent is usually the price per square foot, right? So whether that be, you know, $12 or $14 a square foot plus triple net charges, which is insurance, property taxes, and then essentially maintenance. And a lot of times, depending on the age of the building, those triple net charges can vary widely from property to property.
Well, and also depending on which maintenance items are included in on the triple net, because different leases are written different ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, a true 100% absolute triple net lease, the tenant is responsible for everything from the roof all the way down to the parking lot. I mean, any maintenance items on that building and that property are the tenant's responsibility.
Yeah, and that's why I come back to, you know, you've got to know the age of your building too. How well has it been maintained? How is it built? You know, when was the roof last replaced? How old are the HVAC units? Because when you get into that, if your lease allows the tenant to pass on those HVAC replacement costs as a triple net charge, you're on the hook to replace that. And so again, understanding the concept of base rent plus triple net charges is really important. Plus, I mean, in Sioux Falls, I mean, you look at property taxes between Lincoln County and Minnehaha County is difference. Widely different.
Absolutely.
It's hugely different too. So just saying, oh, well, I used to rent a building in Minnehaha and now I'm moving, you know, south, the southern part of town and I've jumped counties. Well, don't think that just because you understood what those charges were in Minnehaha County that it's synonymous to what they are in Lincoln County, because I think you're going to be surprised. So again, just fully understanding what's in the lease, how those provisions calculate down to really a monthly cost, mm-hmm. Occupancy cost. You know, some landlords would allow for, let's say, parking lot replacement or parking lot resurfacing. Mm-hmm. That's a triple net charge in a lot of leases, that if the parking lot is in disrepair and the landlord makes the decision that they're going to resurface that lot for $120,000, they can assess a portion of that back to the tenant as triple net charges.
And that's all due in the year that the work is done in most situations.
In most cases, yeah. Yep, it is. And that makes it even more challenging because let's say I've got a, you know, $6,000 or $8,000 per month rental rate, all in, triple net and base rent. And then all of a sudden my landlord resurfaces, the landlord resurfaces a parking lot at $150,000 and I'm one of five units. Well, that's $30,000 in triple net charges that gets passed along.
Now, what I feel is fair in those kind of situations, I mean, if the lease is written and it's clear in the lease before the tenant signs that, you know, a resurfacing of the parking lot can be passed down through the triple net, mm-hmm. that's fine. But that parking lot resurfacing also has a useful life. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, you know, that really should be prorated out. Let's say you've got a tenant that has a one-year lease and that parking lot resurfacing gets done in that 1 year. Should they really be responsible for the full cost when they're only going to be there for 1 year of the 10, 20 sure. year useful life?
Sure. So part of when I represent landlords, a lot of times they'll come to me and say, hey, you know, we've got a 10 or 15 year useful life on a parking lot resurfacing, and I don't want to hit my tenants with that all in 1 year. A lot of times I actually suggest that the landlord go borrow money to finance that improvement, and then they pass along the loan cost mm-hmm. for that improvement over the useful life. So if it's a parking lot replacement, go get a 10-year note or a 7-year note, fully ammed, mm-hmm. right? Over that 7 or 10 year period, your monthly payment is $400. Now pass that $400 along to that tenant as a triple net charge.
Exactly. And that's a lot more fair. I mean, the tenant isn't going to necessarily like it, mm-hmm. but it's a lot better than having that one huge hit in that
all
one
at one
year.
Time. Yeah.
So now the question that I was going to ask you that I referred to earlier, most of the time when I'm representing a tenant and we're looking at different spaces that are available for lease on a triple net basis, they give an estimated triple net amount, mm-hmm. right? Let's say it ranges depending on the type of property and the age and whether it's in Lincoln or Minnehaha County, yep. you know, it can range anywhere from $4 to $6 a square foot, maybe $7 on new construction. It can be even higher than that.
Yep.
So let's say that they give a $4.15 a square foot triple net estimate, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because when I'm helping a tenant evaluate which property is going to be the most economical, I'm taking the triple net charges or the estimated triple net charges into account. Well, what if they say it's going to be $4.15 and then it ends up being $5.40? Mm-hmm. You know, is there any recourse for the tenant if the landlord is, you know, you can't necessarily prove that they're misrepresenting what the triple net sure. expenses would be,
sure.
but part of that falls back on me too, because mm-hmm. normally triple net expenses make up 70% of the triple net expenses come from property taxes,
right?
You know, 70 to 75. So if I'm doing my job, I'm double checking what the property taxes are on that property for my tenant before we sign the lease, just to make sure that the estimate is in line with what the reality of it is.
Right, right.
But anyway, back to my question.
Well, so again, I'm representing the tenant in this. I'm actually going to put a cap on that. I'm going to say the first year shall be $4.50 a square foot, mm-hmm. right? The estimate. And then I'm going to say that in all future years, it can't increase more than 4%. Okay. So I'm going to put a max cap on that triple net increase mm-hmm. on an annual basis too, to make sure that we at least know our exposure from the tenant's perspective. If I know that it's 450 and they can only increase it 4% per year, mm-hmm. now I know my plus or minus, right? More so on the plus side. Yep. I know what I might be on the hook for. Sometimes landlords don't like that. It depends on the negotiating power of the tenant, right? I mean, if this is an office tenant who's maybe, you know, taking 10 or 15,000 or 20,000 square feet or something like that, you obviously have more negotiating power than if you're an office tenant who's taking 1,000 square feet.
Exactly.
So, you know, sometimes you have to look at obviously the negotiating power that the tenant has, but I like to try to put caps on that triple net increases on an annual basis so you don't get stuck with a big unknown expense on the tenant side. On the landlord side, I'm probably, you know, again, depending on the negotiating power of that tenant, I may or may not agree to a cap on that because I can't control, and there's controllable, non-controllable triple net expenses.
That's exactly right.
So, I mean, controllable expenses a lot of times are lawn care, you know, some of those, what I would, not necessarily optional, but portions of a triple net expense that can be shopped, mm-hmm. meaning that I'll go find, you know, another player in the market that can provide that service for lesser costs.
Insurance
is another one of those. Yeah.
You know, and I think that there are landlords out there that get a little bit lazy about their insurance because it's not their cost as long as they don't have a vacancy.
Yeah.
But you know, in my opinion, a good landlord is out there making sure that the coverage is comparable,
yep.
but shopping that rate every, you know, so many years just to make sure that, because it seems like once you get a policy with an insurance company, the rates just continue to climb every single year. And maybe they're not climbing on a, you know, just a simply inflation basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you 100%. I think that, you know, landlords should do everything in their power to try to keep the triple net expenses, you know, in line. Because I've seen and worked with tenants that have left, not because the rent rate was out of line, but because the triple net expenses were so expensive.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I mean, again, looking at trying to reduce that lease down to what is your actual physical monthly occupancy cost is really important. And it's something a lot of tenants miss. Mm-hmm. Again, they focus on the base rent and don't necessarily understand the triple net side. Mm-hmm. It's also something, I mean, for what I would say, you know, for more inexperienced tenants that this is maybe their first rodeo, they don't like the triple net provisions, right? They feel like I'm renting this space. You should take care of lawn care. You should make sure my roof doesn't leak. You should make sure the air conditioner turns on when I tell it to. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that. Wait a minute. I'm on the hook for part of that.
Right.
So anyway, so it's a good thing for tenants to fully understand the impacts of that, of the cost. And again, going back to the term conversation, sometimes there's escalators and different terms. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes it's the other concept outside of a, you know, triple net lease is that of a gross lease. But mm-hmm. I don't know how much do you see gross leases. I see them once in a while, but usually in older properties.
Yeah, the two places where you see gross leases are older properties and industrial type of properties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with industrial type properties, you don't have nearly as many triple net expenses, on a percentage basis, you don't have as large of a percentage of the total rent going towards triple net. And there again, the vast majority of it is property taxes. Mm-hmm. And the amount of maintenance long-term on an industrial property is much less in comparison to a Class A office building, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a Class A office tenant that's paying $20 a square foot, triple net, plus triple net, I should say, then they expect that office to look good for their yeah. clients that are coming in on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
That lawn needs to be mowed, the snow needs to be moved. You know, I've got one office class A office building myself, and if there is an inch of snow or even less than an inch of snow with wind, we are
cleaning it.
Exactly. And that is an uncontrollable expense.
Right.
And especially, that's the other thing too. A tenant does need to understand if they have certain expectations.
Wait a minute. You don't control when it snows? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I have not mastered the ability to control the weather yet, unfortunately. Once I do, I'll let you know.
Okay, good.
You know, making some money on that too.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, if a tenant has an expectation that anytime any amount of snow falls, the parking lot is going to be cleared so that there's, you know, it's perfectly clean all the time, that is going to cost more. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times when, you know, in my opinion, but I grew up on a farm. You know, I mean, I didn't mind trudging through a little bit of snow. There are times when I see the amount of snow in the parking lot and I'm thinking, I don't think we really need to clear this. Mm-hmm. But if I talk to my tenant, they're like, yeah, we want it cleared. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then that cost passes
gets
through to
passed
you.
To you. Yep.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
So anyway, I mean,
well, good deal. Well, let's see what else is in this, this lease that we should talk about. Well, let's talk about build-out expenses. That's something that sometimes is a concept too that tenants miss or tenants maybe don't understand necessarily the economics of how it passes to from the tenant to the landlord. You know, in a lot of spaces, especially new spaces or what I would say are tired spaces, a lot of times landlord will offer some sort of a tenant improvement allowance to help that tenant build the space out for them and get it to suit their needs with the hopes that they become a long-term tenant, obviously. Yep. Yep. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, what are you seeing in the market as far as tenant improvement allowances, where you see it, where you don't, you know, how does that help when you're trying to market a space as well.
Yeah. The majority of the place, just like you said, Alex, the majority of the places where you see a tenant improvement allowance are either in older spaces that, you know, really need to be brought up to date or in brand new spaces that haven't been completed yet. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the majority of the tenant improvement allowance amounts that I see in the market are in that $20 to $30 a square foot. While with increasing construction costs, you're not going to get a lot of work done for $20 to $30 a square foot. So as a tenant, you need to understand that if you're going to step up and pay to improve the landlord's property, then in my opinion, that should be reflected in the rent. Mm-hmm. So let's say you've got a Class C space that you're going to go in and help the landlord improve to a Class B plus or A minus, mm-hmm. right? Okay, well then, if you're putting a substantial amount of money into that space to improve it, in my opinion, when I'm representing the tenant, then you shouldn't be paying the full rent rate that you would be paying on an A-minus space if you were walking into something that was already in that, you know, in that quality range. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the interesting part about commercial real estate. Literally, everything is up for negotiation.
Yeah.
And my job as a commercial real estate agent, in my opinion anyway, is to fully understand the highest priorities of both sides so that I can try to come up with a plan that meets both sides' highest priorities. And every landlord and every tenant is different from the standpoint of their priorities. And so it's a ton of information gathering.
Sure.
If I'm doing a good job of representing.
And I would agree with that. I mean, again, on the TI side, the tenant improvement side, you know, you've got to look for that. How do I say this? You've got to look for that sweet spot between both, right? If there's got to be something that the tenant wants that they can achieve through that. I mean, if you're building out the space, but you're, you know, looking at the cash flow side and say, well, maybe I can borrow the money up front for a bigger tenant improvement allowance, but as a result of that, I'm going to pay less in rent over the term of this, right? So I'm going to front load some of that on the building improvement side. Or maybe it's going to be the opposite side. They're going to have the landlord give a larger tenant improvement, but then I'm going to pay it in higher monthly rent, right? So that's kind of that flux between the two positions. And again, I think the use of a TI provision can be really powerful for both landlord and tenant to make sure you find that happy medium with the deal, I guess. Mm-hmm. And like you said, every deal is different. Everybody's different and everything is up for negotiation a lot of times on the commercial side.
A few leases that I've recently been involved with tenant improvement allowances come to mind. You know, there are some, let's say you've got an aggressively growing business that is looking for a second or a third location, and they're so growing so aggressively that, you know, cash flow or borrowing power is an issue. Mm-hmm. Now, they want, you know, multiple locations. They want to grow. And so in my mind, that is the kind of, and they've already got an established business that's successful. Mm-hmm. So they're not going away. You know, in that kind of situation, I guess I am more apt, even if I'm representing the landlord, to say, maybe we're okay taking on a little bit larger tenant improvement allowance, or we're defining the tenant improvement allowance that you're kicking in, and then the amount over and above that, we're amortizing over the term, the initial term of the lease. So you are getting paid back, but you're still helping out the tenant from the standpoint of them not having to borrow additional funds. Because, you know, it's expensive to buy all the equipment or furniture or whatever you need for a brand new space, for a second location. And so, you know, sometimes a tenant's borrowing power can be kind of strapped in that situation, especially if they're aggressively growing.
Right.
Now, the flip side of it is a landlord loves to see a tenant put a little skin in the game. I mean, you and I were dealt with a situation not very long ago where the landlord took on the full cost of remodeling a space for a specialty use. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, the tenant didn't follow through and honor their lease agreement. And the problem in that situation is when the tenant has no skin in the game and they're not putting any money up front, they can walk away. And yes, they have the lease document and even a personal guarantee, but if they don't have any money to be able to pay it, you can't get blood out of a stone. Yeah. So, you know, that's another thing. And when I'm representing landlords, it's extremely important to do background checks, to do, you know, financial research on the tenant, mm-hmm. and make sure that you understand the financial stability of that tenant and their ability to pay in a worst case scenario.
Yeah. You bring up so many different topics that we could dive into. I mean, personal guarantees could be, you know, we could have a 30-minute conversation on personal guarantees and where they're appropriate, where they're not appropriate. What kind of information do you want to obtain from a tenant? You know, I've also run into situations too where, you know, landlords haven't had the financial ability to make repairs and to do things that they need to do also. I mean, I think in residential real estate, you run into a lot more what I would classify as slumlords, right? People that don't put dollars back into these properties and they fall into disrepair. On the commercial side, I think supply and demand kind of works itself out. If you don't put the money into the property, you're not going to find a tenant. They're going to move on to something else.
That is exactly right. You know, every year there's a certain amount of vacancy in every asset class in the mm-hmm. Sioux Falls area, but you tend to see the same properties remaining vacant mm-hmm. because they have owners that are not willing to fix them up. Yep. And get them to a point where they're leasable or where they're asking far too much rent for the quality of the property.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Yeah. I think, obviously if I'm representing the tenant, you know, we're going to be pretty clear on what the personal guarantee says, you know, so making sure that you understand what a personal guarantee is as well. Again, I would say inexperienced tenants don't necessarily understand that if they have a business and a landlord is wanting to lease the space from the business, but is also asking for a personal guarantee, essentially your personal assets are on the line for that guarantee to make sure that you fulfill the obligations. And as you stated, you sometimes can't get blood out of a stone or out of a turnip on this situation, but that could mean for a tenant, if they don't fulfill the lease obligations, it could mean selling their house, could mean, you know, diving into their 401k to try to make that landlord whole. And so really understanding what is a default, when is it triggered, how does the lease allow for that landlord to go after the personal guarantee of the tenant? And then, I mean, on the landlord side, how much do you want to? I mean, because to do that, you're probably going to have to hire somebody like me. I'm not necessarily cheap when it comes to what I do for my clients.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah. And yeah, right. You get what you pay for. But I mean, I can go chase a personal guarantee, you know, 12 ways to Sunday, but I can't guarantee I'm going to get you a dollar out of that person, depending on what their financial strength is. So, you know, landlords do need to, you know, do some research, do their due diligence on who they're signing these leases with and who's backing up that lease, to make sure that they have an understanding of what their ability to collect is. And if there is a default, what are they likely and going to recover, if anything? Because again, a lot of times landlords putting in those tenant improvement dollars, they're putting money into the space. They either have the cash or they're borrowing the TI on future rents to pay that debt service in the future. And so you've got to know what's my ability to get that money in the future. So just interesting provisions. I mean, we've bounced around a lot this morning on some of the different provisions, and we could continue on. I mean, we haven't even touched on an indemnification or insurance. Insurance provisions are really important. Assignment and subletting, whether it's allowed or not allowed, that's another provision that oftentimes I see tenants don't understand, that if something doesn't work, they say, well, I'm just going to find somebody else that'll fill the space. Well, you may or may not have that right under the lease. And so you've just understanding the nuts and bolts of how the mechanics of these commercial leases work is really important.
Well, you know, I think you'd really teed it up well for me to get people to come back and watch the second episode. I mean, that wasn't our original intent, but this seems like a great way to segue into the next podcast episode, because you're exactly right. I mean, we've got so much of this lease that we haven't covered yet, but yet still excellent information that we've discussed here. Mm-hmm. And that's really the whole point of this, is to educate. I mean, if people at least have a base of knowledge going into a lease negotiation, it's a lot easier for me and for you to be able to help bring them up to speed on this specific lease. Mm-hmm. So I love the fact that we're, you know, sitting here talking about all these details and hopefully helping people understand better.
Wait a minute. You get your commission irrespective of whether I have to revise the lease. You're trying to short circuit my hourly time and make some changes to this lease, aren't you? Wait a minute.
I'm trying to make your job easier here, Alex. You know, if you've got an educated client, then they're easier to work with. Yeah. Man, you can steer them in the right direction.
Absolutely. It's good too, because honestly, with Sioux Falls, the way it's growing, and, you know, I feel like we're in a very entrepreneurially minded community.
Absolutely.
Where people are more apt to take a risk and put their foot out there and start something. But having them understand what they're getting themselves into is super important. And I'm a bit flippant about that. And I joke, obviously, about, robbing my business because people know what they're doing. But in all seriousness, the more educated people can become about the provisions, the mechanics, the nuts and bolts of these lease agreements, the better off they're going to be long term. So thanks for doing this.
Well, thanks for helping me out with it. I mean, there are a lot of elements to a lease that I can speak to, but am not an expert on. I mean, I don't write my own leases. I have you do it for me, and there's a reason why. So, I think this is going to be a great discussion in the next episode, to be able to go through some of these details and talk through understanding why they're here. I mean, the great part about this conversation that we've had today is we covered a lot of ground that is top of mind for a tenant and a landlord. When you're negotiating a lease, the vast majority of it has to do with the rent rate, the triple net, build out expenses, those types of things. But now, you know, in this next episode, we'll be able to kind of cover all of the stuff that's under the surface that maybe isn't top of mind and initially thought of, but still can make a huge impact on the way a lease operates and the way the relationship between the tenant and the landlord is either a good relationship, good working relationship or not, based on, you know, all of the things that are behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Make sure to subscribe so that you know and you're notified the next time an episode comes out. And I want to thank Alex for being here. Alex, you know, I've had a terrific experience working with you. I'm so thankful that you were willing to take time out of your day to come and have this discussion. And, you know, I joked earlier about not wanting people to come and work with you because I need you available when I need you. But where can people find you?
Sure. So the easiest way to get a hold of me is to visit our website, www.cutlerlawfirm.com. And from there, you can see the full list of services that our firm provides, along with profiles for each of our attorneys. And my contact information is on my profile page. So again, cutlerlawfirm.com, C-U-T-L-E-R lawfirm.com. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for watching. This has been Brian Smith with Vantas Commercial Real Estate. My contact information can be found on the Vantas website. That's vantascommercial.com. And if you have any questions about the things we've covered or anything else having to do with commercial real estate, I'd be happy to visit with you and help you understand everything that you need to know to be able to take care of yourself in a commercial real estate deal. Thanks so much.